Okay, well, good morning to everyone. And it's great to see you all again to begin another season of learning according to Shitat HaRevadim here on the Torah in Motion Broadcasting Network. And I'm delighted that we're resuming our studies. I'd like to just give a 5 minutes a review of the principles by which we're going to learn, and then we will dive directly into the material. For those of you that have not yet downloaded the sources, they can be found on the Torah in Motion website, as noted on the note board here on your screen. And you should find there two files. One, the sugyot, the first 30 sugyot of Arvei Pesachim, as well as the sheets of Torah HaTanaim for this perek. The principles of the study of Talmud according to Shitat HaRevadim can be summarized as follows. First, we do not learn the sources according to the way they appear in the printed texts, because the printed texts were delivered to us by non-Jewish printings on the whole. But rather, we look beyond the printed nature of the text to the original Masorah through which the materials were passed down to us, and we learn in four stages. First, Mishnah, the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, followed by, at the second stage, Torah HaTanaim, that is, learning Tosefta and Braita and Midrashei Halakha, opposite the Mishnah, in order to understand the full content of Tanaitic teaching. Then we learn Torah HaAmoraim, that is, the Memrot of the Amoraim to be found in the Gemara. And lastly, we proceed to the Shakta Vatarya and the full Sugya, in order to see the concepts and the development of the halakha in its full measure. And these four stages reflect accurately the stages of historical development of our sources. And in this way, we fulfill the true nature of Torah Shebaal Peh, which is to see how our holy tradition, which is started at Sinai, is revealed generation by generation through Chachmei Yisrael. And therefore, our goal is to find the dynamic nature of the learning that we find in the sources. We don't see all of the Talmidei Chachamim who are mentioned in the Mishnah and Gemara as sitting around one table speaking to each other. We do not learn that way. But rather, we see every generation and every location in its own context, historical context, linguistic context, cultural context, and we ask the questions that need to be asked in order to understand the sources, kipshutam, according to their simple and original meaning. We then take a look at how those sources are processed by later generations who are understanding them in light of new circumstances and are coming up with new applications, not changing the principles or even changing the halakha, but merely adapting the principles of the halakha that was given to new circumstances as through time and space. All right, I think that I see that most of you are return our colleagues, so we can go directly to the material without any further ado. Please open, if you would, the Torah HaTanaim file that you downloaded from Torah in Motion. Let's take a look first at Perek Arvei Pesachim, the Perek of Mishnah, and see what we can find. As you know, the Masechet Pesachim is third in line in Seder Moed, which is arranged according to the size of the Masechtot. Shabbat, the open Seder Moed, because it has 24 Prekim, and then Eruvim, and then Pesachim, with 10. And then the Masechtot go down in size through the rest of the Seder. And within Masechet Pesachim, we have basically three sections of the Masechet. We have the first three Prekim, which deal with the laws of chametz and matzah, the ur chametz, those materials with which one fulfills one's obligation of matzah, and other assorted dinim relating to those things. As well, in the first three prekim, we have the issue of with what materials you fulfill the mitzvah of maror, and those are covered in the first three prekim. Prekim dalet until tet deal with korban pesach, that is, it deals with both Korban Pesach Rishon and Korban Pesach Sheni. And finally, in Perek Yud, which is the Perek we're going to study, Perek Arvei Pesachim, we arrive at Seder Pesach. In other words, the entire Masechet is arranged according to the observance time. We start with Bi'ur Chametz at the beginning of the Masechet and move our way toward Seder Pesach at the end of the Masechet. Now, when we look at Perek Arvei Pesachim, we are going to note something very interesting. If you take a look, Mishnah Aleph tells us that one can only begin the Seder Pesach at dark, and then that everyone is obligated to have the Arba Kosot Shel Yayin, Afilu Min HaTzamkui, if it's necessary, that even if one has to take from Tzedaka, one must have the four cups. And then, if you take a look at the Perek, can you tell me, my friends, what is the organizing principle of the Perek? What is the spine, topically, of Perek Arvei Pesachim? Who would like to take a look at the Perek and make a comment on it? Just press down your transmit on the audio square and speak into your mic. What does Mishnah Bet deal with? Who would like to say? Well, Mishnah Bet, of course, deals with the first kos of the four kosot. It deals, well, Yisrael mentions correctly that the whole Perek is organized around the four cups. That's right. The entire Perek, Mishnah Bet, deals with Kos Rishon and Mishnah Gimel. Then you get to Mishnah Dalet, Hein Vav, that deals with the second cup and those items of the Seder which are arranged around the second cup. And then Mishnah Zayin deals with Kos Shlishi and Kos Rivi'i. And then Chet and Tet deal with dinim that relate to the end of the Seder after the fourth cup. And therefore, we find that the entire Perek is organized around the Arba Kosot Shel Yayin. This is a bit surprising because, as you know, the Arba Kosot Shel Yayin are rabbinic, they're derabbanan, as opposed to the mitzvot of, let's say, of matzah, of Korban Pesach and Moror at the time of the Mikdash, and of Haggadah, which are deoraita. The Mishnah Davka decides to look at the Seder through the focus of the Dalet Pasuk. There's many reasons for this. We won't go into them at this time. Maybe in the course of our sessions we'll do a little bit of Machshevet. But it's clear that Chazal felt that all of the messages of Seder Pesach, including of the Mitzvot Yoraita, could best be understood through the values represented by the Arba Pasuk. In any event, let's take a look then, after we've seen the overall structure of the Perek, let's take a look at the first Mishnah a little bit more in depth, together with the Makbilot, with the parallel sources from the rest of Tanaitic literature. You find this on the second page of your source sheets about Torah HaTanaim. On the first page, you see there that you have the nine Mishnayot of the Perek, and then on the second page, which are, they're highlighted in yellow, you have the sources that we're going to deal with at the present moment. The Mishnah says, Arvei Pesachim Samuch LaMincha, that on Erev Pesach, close to Mincha, that's a term which is not exactly clear, we'll have to get into that, Lo Yuchal Adam Ad Shetechshach, a person must not eat anything until it gets dark. Ve'afilu Ani Shebi Yisrael, Lo Yuchal Ad Sheyasev, even the poorest of Israel cannot eat until they lay down, until they lean, as was traditionally done, to lean on the left-hand side with your table, your small table in front of you. Each one had his own table, and that was hasava. Lo yitchitzu lo mi'arba kosot shel yayin v'afilu min ha'tzamkui. And we have to make sure that everyone has the arba kosot shel yayin. Now, the sources that follow from the Tosefta and the three baraitot that we're going to deal with in today's shiur, all deal with this issue of what does it mean, samuch lemincha. What does it mean, close to mincha? And the Tosefta says, erev sachim samuch lemincha lo yuchal adam ad shetechshach, which is exactly what it says in the Mishnah, with the exception that arvei pesachim has become erev pesachim. Afilu ani shebi Yisrael lo yuchal ad sheyasev, lo yitkutu lo mi'arba kosot shel yayin sheyesh behen kedei revi'it. In other words, we now have understood that these arba kosot are defined by a certain quantity of wine, that is a fourth of a loaf. Bein chai, bein mazuv, bein chadash, bein yashan. And it can be either a wine which is not been mixed with water, or mixed with water, whether it's new wine or old wine, it doesn't matter. And Rabbi Yehuda says, however, it is Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, Tami de Rabbi Akiva, Uvivat Shebol Tam Yain Umareh. As long as the wine has the taste and the appearance of wine, it qualifies as Arba Kosot Soyan. Now this Tosefta, then what does it really add to our Mishnah? It adds the quantity and the quality of the wine about which we're speaking. It doesn't analyze the term Samuch L'mincha. It doesn't even define what does it mean, Lo Yochal Adam. Does this refer to any eating of any kind? Or does it refer to eating of a certain quantity or a certain quality? We don't know. The Tosefta is interested in the quality and quantity of the wine. But the next three brachot deal with a completely different issue. It deals with the whole Isur, the whole prohibition of eating Samuch L'mincha. The Braita, the first Braita, which is the third source on your Makbilot page, says, Lo yochal adam b'arvei shabbatot b'yamin tovim min amincha ulamala. Kedei shiyikanetz l'shabbat kishu ta'ala, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi omer, ochel v'holech ad shetechshach. We have here a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. This is Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai and Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, both Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva from the generation of Usha, that is immediately following the Bar Kokhba rebellion during the time of the Hadrianic persecutions in Eretz Israel. And their machloket is whether or not on all Arvei Shabbatot and all Yom Tovim, Erev Yom Tov, not just Pesach, as dealt with in our Mishnah, that one should not eat from Mincha Ulamala. And of course, when we say Mina Mincha Ulamala, we have always the doubt whether what mincha is being discussed, because as you know, the halakha is divides mincha time into two, mincha gdula and mincha ktana. Mincha gdula from 6.5 temporal hours of daylight, and mincha ktana from 9.5 temporal hours of daylight. And the question is, therefore, what is being referred to here is the prohibition to eat on Erev Pesach, and according to the Braita, on all our Vesha Shabbatot and Yamin Tovim. Is this from Mincha Gdola, or is it from Mincha Ktana? Neither the Mishnah nor the Braita say. Not only that, we have that in the Mishnah it says Samuch L'mincha, whatever that means. We don't know what Samuch means. How close is close? Whereas the Braita doesn't say Samuch L'mincha, it says Minha Mincha Ulamala, from Mincha and on. Is this Dafta? Do we have here a Machloket between the Mishnah and the Braita, whether or not the Isur is from Mincha or from Samuch L'mincha, or are the two sources talking about completely different things? And the terms Mincha, let's say one might be talking about Mincha Ktana and one Mincha Gdola, for instance. Or are the terms Samuch L'mincha and Mincha, do they really mean the same thing? It's just two different expressions for the same term. And Samuch L'mincha would mean just before Mincha. So that really there would be little nafkamina whether it's talking about the actual mincha time or a half hour before. It's not exactly clear. But what is very interesting is that in the Braita, we have the machloket, first of all, in general, on all Shabbatot and Yamin Tovim, not only Pesach, and also we have the naming of the tradits. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says, Lo Yochal Adam, and Rabbi Yossi says, you can continue eating all the way up until it gets dark. You don't have to prevent yourself from eating anything during this time. Now the question that arises, of course, when you look at this Braita opposite our Mishnah, is according to whom is our Mishnah? Is our Mishnah going according to Rabbi Yehuda, or is our Mishnah going according to Rabbi Yose in the Braita, or is our Mishnah a third opinion not represented in the Braita? This is a very vexing question, because why in the world would Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in our Mishnah bring this din only regarding Erev Pesach? When if it's Rabbi Yehuda, for instance, then he should have brought it also in Masechet Shabbat or in any other or in Masechet Beitzah dealing with Yom Tov. Why dafka here by Erev Pesach? Unless Rabbi Yehuda is taking Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai's position. But paskening is only relevant on Erev Pesach and not on the other days. But if he would have intended that, he should have said it. So therefore, we have a difficulty. Could it be going according to Rabbi Yose, where, for instance, Rabbi Yose would say you can continue eating, But in general, on Shabbatot and on Yom Tovim, on Erev, but Rabbi Yossi agrees that on Pesach it's a special din, because on Erev Pesach you have mitzvot achila, and therefore maybe our mission is according to Rabbi Yossi. And we have no way of determining whether our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yossi. That's a difficult issue. Although on a simple level, it would appear that it's going according to Rabbi Yehuda, nevertheless, it's not out of the question that it be according to Rabbi Yossi, as I described. Look at the second Braita. Let's just see if there are any questions at this time. Yisrael is saying it could be more relevant by Pesach because the essential mitzvah concerns eating. Yes, that's right. In other words, there would be a reason for saying that Rabbi Yossi sees the chidush by Erev Pesach, which would contravene his normal opinion on other Shabbatot and Yomim Tovim. Look at the second Braita. It says, Lo yochal adam be'erev Shabbat v'yamim tovim mitesha sha'ot ulamala kidei shi'tenes l'shabbat yeshu taveh divrei Reb Yehuda Rabbi Yossi omer ochel v'horech ad shetechshach. Now this is a very interesting source, because although it is almost word for word the first Braita, almost, there's one very significant difference. Instead of saying mina mincha ulamala, that one is forbidden to eat, it says mitesha sha'ot ulamala. Now what is tesha sha'ot? Of course, it's 1/2 hour before mincha ktana. And therefore, this second Braita helps us, but also disturbs us. It helps us in the sense that now we know that the Amoraim are are talking about mincha ktana and not mincha gdola. They're talking about the mincha which begins at 9.5 temporal hours of daylight. But if mincha begins at 9.5, then why does this second Braita say from 9 hours and above one is forbidden to eat? Why 9 hours? This, of course, recalls to us the terminology of our Mishnah, samuch l'mincha. Because samuch l'mincha, of course, would mean near mincha. Now, Gil is asking that your second page starts with Rabbi Yehuda Omer. No, I think you have it wrong there. The second page of your sources should start with the Mishnah and then go into the parallel sources. In any event, the second Braita, therefore, helps us disambiguate the topic. We're talking about mincha ktana, but it contradicts the first Braita in that the first Braita says mina mincha ulamala, and the second Braita says mitesha sha'ot ulamala. And we now can ask, is the second Braita the equivalent of our Mishnah, samuch l'mincha, or is it not? Or is samuch l'mincha mean closer to mincha or further from mincha? Is the second Braita in a stira to the first Braita, as far as the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is concerned? Or are the terms Tesha Shotu Lamala and Mina Mincha Lamala intended really to say the same thing? It's not clear. We look at all of these different sources, and we see a lot of things in common, but we see fine points that kind of disturb our comparison of them. The last source that we need to study for today in the Tanaitic literature is in the third Braita that you find, the longer Braita you find there on the page. And it says as follows, Mafsikin v'shabbatot, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi omer in mafsikin, that if you're eating on Erev Shabbat, you must stop eating before Shabbat comes in, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi says you don't have to stop, you can keep going, eating straight through. How would that be arranged in terms of Kiddush and Sudat Shabbat? All right, we'll get to that in the Gemara. But for right now, they have here a machloket about what's called Hafsaka, whether you are obligated to interrupt eating if you've already begun a meal. Let's say you begin a meal, not Samuch L'mincha, but you say you begin a meal at 3 p.m. And Mincha is only at 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. Then do you have to stop eating when it comes to Mincha, or do you not have to stop? So that's the question here. It's a slightly different issue than what we talked about in the first three mikorot, because in the first three mikorot we're talking about whether you should initiate a meal, mina mincha ulamala, or misamuch la mincha ulamala. Here it's talking about whether you have to interrupt a meal that's already in progress. And then the Braita brings us a brilliant event. Umaaseh v'Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, v'Rabbi Yehuda, v'Rabbi Yossi, shayu misubin v'ako. That in the time of Usha, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who was Nasi, and these two Tanaim, known to us from these other Nefurot, were having a meal together in Akko. The Kadesh Alehem Ayom, and the day became holy. That is, they were moving from Friday into Shabbat, and Shabbat was coming in. Amar lo Rabban Shimon bin Gamliel Rabbi Yossi. So Rabban Gamliel turns to Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi is, of course, the one who holds a mafsikim, but you don't have to interrupt your meal if you started it already. And he says to him, V'ribi, ritzoncha nafsi, v'nichosh lidivrei Yehuda chavireinu. He says to him, my master, would it be okay with you if we stop eating in order to give proper deference to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, our friend? Because Rabbi Yehuda is more machmir. He says, you do have to interrupt. So he asks Rabbi Yossi, would you mind being more machmir here so that Rabbi Yehuda feels comfortable? Amar lo, so Rabbi Yossi answers him, V'chol yom v'yom ata mechabev divarai lifnei Rabbi Yehuda. V'achshav ata mechabev divrei Rabbi Yehuda v'fanai. And Akko, of course, was the place of Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says to him, you know, every day, Rabban Shimon, you prefer my opinions to the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda. Now you want to prefer the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda to my opinion here in my own location? So Rabbi Shimon understands that Rabbi Yosef has been insulted. And he says to her, okay, Amar lo, im ken lo nafsi, if that's how you're going to be, then we won't interrupt. Shema yirua talmidim, yitvu halakha ledorot. And lest the students who are watching us eat our meal will see that we've stopped, and they'll fix halakha permanently in the, according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, not according to your opinion. Amru. And our chachamim said, lo zazu misham ad shekavu halakha to Rabbi Yosef. That incident ended with the fixing of the halakha, according to Rabbi Yosef, which is that one does not have to interrupt if one has begun a meal. Now, let's summarize. What do we know from the Talmudic literature? First of all, we know that the perek is organized around the four posuk. Second of all, we know that the Mishnah says that one cannot eat from samuch l'mincha. We know that the term samuch l'mincha is not repeated in any of the other Tanaitic sources, but we have in all three of the other sources a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai and Rabbi Yosef ben Chalakta, whether or not one can eat from mincha ulamala or mitesha sha'ot ulamala. And we have a second machloket, whether if you have already begun a meal, whether you're obligated to stop it when you get to this stage. And that halakha was eventually fixed according to Rabbi Yosef, that one does not have to stop eating, one can go directly through, which I'm sure is happy for all of the professors among us. Now, this is what we know from the Tanaitic material, and if we didn't have the Gemara, if all we had were these sources of the Tanaim, we would be left on our own to compare them and to decide how are we going to line these sources up one with the other for the sake of Pesach Halakha. Are we going to say that samuch l'mincha of the Mishnah is equivalent to the teisha sha'ot ulamala of the second braita, and therefore assume that the first braita, which says mina mincha ulamala, is an anomaly, either textually corrupt or simply idiomatically inexact, saying that mina mincha ulamala is really teisha sha'ot ulamala or samuch l'mincha, but the Tana of the braita wasn't careful about his terminology? Or shall we say that we have here two different traditions about what the machloka between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosef really was, that are brought down in two different braitos? As you know, the braitos are remnants of books, of statements of Tanaim which have been lost to us. So could it be, for instance, that the two authors of the two different braitos had different takes on the machloka of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosef, and each one is bringing down his own opinion on this, and we are left in a position of skira between the two braitos? Comes Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and he sees this, and he decides to paskin. So he takes the opinion of teisha sha'ot ulamala as being more exact, and calls it samuch l'mincha. Maybe the term samuch l'mincha softens it somewhat. Maybe even it's a compromise between the two positions of samuch l'mincha or mina mincha ulamala, and paskins and his mishnah anonymously according to Rabbi Yehuda, or possibly even according to Rabbi Yosef, who would differentiate then between Shabbat and Yom Tov, and between Pesach, which has a special din because of the mitzvot achilah. what comes out of all of this really is that when you look at just the sources of the Tanaim, you can't really get very far. I mean, you can line up a lot of information and you can delineate what are the differences of opinion between the sources. But it's very hard to come to a unified field theory of Tanaitic literature when you look at the sources like this. And because of that, we have a better understanding of what the Amoraim are doing when they come to the Sugah. When Amoraim come to analyze Tanaitic literature, they're attempting to solve these kinds of problems. Now let's look into the Sugah. The first Sugah in the Gemara that you have in front of you, please tell me, yes, Yisrael wants to ask a quick question. What, again, is the difference between a Braita and a Tosefta? The difference is as follows. The Tosefta was a work put together by Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshaya, the Talmidim Chavurim of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. It's organized exactly like the Mishnah, Shisha Sarim and 63 Masechtot, and was edited and authorized. It was an authorized source. Therefore, when we quote something from Tosefta, it's like quoting it from Mishnah. It's a very, very authoritative source. And it's available today as a book. You can buy the Tosefta. You can buy the Supramontal Tosefta or the Lieberman Tosefta. But it's a book, just like the Mishnah. The Braitot are snippets of information that are left over from books that have been lost. And they can come, we don't know where they came from. We don't know what Beit Midrash they came from. We don't know what books they came from. We only know that all we have left is these quotations that were saved because the Amoraim preserved them in the Gemara. And therefore, because we don't know their source, and we don't know how authoritative their sources were, the Gemara always treats Braitot with a certain degree of suspicion and suggests if there's a Braita that stands in the way of understanding all the other sources correctly or uniformly, the Gemara could suggest about a Braita, Mishabeshtahi, that the Braita is a flaw, that its transmission was not accurate. The Gemara will never say Mishabeshtahi by a Tosefta, because the Tosefta was edited and published formally, like the Mishnah. Now, the authority of the Tosefta is more than that of a Braita. It's almost as great as that of the Mishnah itself. In many Eretz Yisraelic sugyas that you find in the Bavli, or in the Yerushalmi for sure, you'll find the Tosefta playing the role of Mishnah, and Mishnah playing the role of additional source, opposite to the way we have it in the Bavli. But on the whole, the way we look at it today is that Mishnah is our basic source, Tosefta is an authoritative additional source, and Braitot are sources worthy of study, but also worthy of just a drop of suspicion in terms of their trustworthiness and authority. Do we have Braitot that are not found in the Gemara? Asks Israel. We certainly have Braitot that are found in the Yerushalmi and not in the Bavli, or we have Braitot found in the Yerushalmi that are in the Bavli that are not in the Yerushalmi. And of course we have the seven books of Midrashei Halakha, which are often quoted as Braitot in the Gemara, but occur as complete books outside of the Bavli. But other than those sources, we don't have, let's say, extra rabbinic sources like historical books or things like that that quote Braitot. That we don't have. They're only quoted within the context of rabbinic literature. But in order to have a complete picture, you have to assemble the Torat HaTanaim around the Mishnah from the Bavli, from the Yerushalmi, from the Midrashei Halakha, and from the Tosefta. And that's why in our company in Bonai, we've done that. On all of Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, we've collected all of the parallel Tanaitic literature, and we are hoping to find resources to publish what we would call Torat HaTanaim HaShlema, which would have Mishnah in the middle of the page, with the Tosefta and the Braitot from Bavli Yerushalmi and the Midrashei Halakha surrounding the Mishnah, with a commentary that explains how they relate to each other. This would enable teachers and or serious learners to study Torat HaTanaim before going into the Sugya Mikmara, which is the correct way to study. First to learn all of Torat HaTanaim and know what everything the Tanaim had to say, and then when you go to study Gemara, you understand what the Amoraim are really dealing with. Now, this is one of the problems we have in Torah education today, is that most students who study Talmud have not studied Torat HaTanaim before they go into the Sugyot, and therefore there's no way that they can properly understand what the Amoraim are doing. Because there are many times that Amora will relate to the Mishnah and ask a question on the Mishnah, which has its source really in a Braita, but he won't quote the Braita. He'll just base himself on the Braita. Now how in the world you'll ask, how can Namura ask a question of his own on a Mishnah without an authority? But he has an authority. He has a Braita that he's not quoting. And therefore, students who enter the study of Talmud before they are fluent in Torah Tanaim on the Peret that they're learning are really walking into the sugyas with one hand tied behind their back, if not both. And therefore, in all of these schools that we work with, we urge the schools, after teaching Mishnah, to teach a year of Torah Tanaim before preparing the students to go into Talmud. Those of you that are on screen here, maybe I introduce to you Betsy Forrester, who's sitting there with her camera on. And Betsy teaches rabbinic literature at a school in Chicago. She teaches the third year of our program, where she's teaching the students about Tosefta and Braita and Midrashei Halakha in preparation for their following year of study, which will be the entrance into Talmud. And more and more schools are doing this now across the country. We have now about 60 schools that are working this way, and it's spreading now into high schools and even into adult institutions. So anyway, that's to answer your question. Now, Yisrael is asking, are you saying Torah Tanaim or Torah Tanaim? Note, when we use the term Torah Tanaim, we're referring to all of the works of the Tanaim that we have available to us today. Torah Kohanim is the name of the Midrash Halakha of Rabbi Akiva on Sefer Vayikra. It's one source of Torah Tanaim. So, Eitan is asking, what does the Torah Amorim add that the Torah Tanaim lacks? Oh, well, several things, Eitan. First of all, after the Torah Tanaim is complete, there are still many questions that are open. As we've found here in our study of Torah Tanaim on this parak, there are many questions that are open. The Amoraim come to resolve these questions to the best of their ability so that the halakha can be paskin. That's number one. Number two, Amoraim add the further dimension of additionally changing circumstances. Remember, the Amoraim are in 300 years, eight generations, after the Mishnah, from 220 to 505, eight generations, and a lot of things changed in those generations. Not only from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, but within Eretz Yisrael, and within Bavel, many things changed. So the Amoraim are like poskim in our own day, in the sense that they're taking the original halakha from the Mishnah, and saying, now how do we understand what Rebbe would have intended in our circumstances? And I want to make myself clear, it's not that the Amoraim are coming and changing the halakha of the Mishnah, saying that we disagree with the Mishnah. That's not what they're doing. They're saying, how would we understand the principles of the Mishnah in our circumstances today? What would the Tana have said if he were standing in our shoes? That's what really an Okimta is in the first place, where the later authority is asking, what would the early authorities say different than what he says literally with his own words if he were standing in my shoes and looking at my circumstances? This is the way that halakha develops from generation to generation. Now, Eitan is saying, from a source perspective, aren't you supposed to learn Torah Amoraim separately as well? Yes, absolutely, and we will. Now we're going to learn Torah. We learn Torah Tanaim now. Then we have to learn Torah Amoraim separately, and only after that would we go back and learn the Shakta Vitzari on the Sugya to see what it is adding to both Torah Tanaim and Torah Amoraim. Furthermore, Eitan, as you know, within Torah Tanaim and within Torah Amoraim, we have to see each of them according to the generations, the layers within each one. Within Torah Tanaim, we'll study Yavne before Usha and Usha before Tziporin. And similarly, among the Amoraim, we'll study generation 1 before generation 3 and generation 3 before generation 5, because we want to recreate the organic development of the Torah Shavuot Peh over the generations and see how its principles are being revealed as circumstances change. All right, now let's look at Eitan says, it's been a while. Thanks for the refreshment. Okay, no problem. Yeah, it's good to be back all together again learning. Let's look at the sugya. Rabotai Ugvirotai. Please take a look at the sugya and tell me which Amoraim appear in the first sugya, in sugya number one. Who appears? Come on, I'd like some answers. Either chat it or type it. Okay, so Yisrael Kanda says Rav Yosef. We have a Rav Huna. Let's take a look here. Let's take a look at the sugya. Are there any other? We're looking at sugya number one. I hope it didn't turn out in opposite order for you as it did for me here. But okay, in any event, we see Rav Huna, right? In number two Aleph, we have Rav Huna and Rav Papa, correct, Jeff and Betsy? That's right. And Marzutra, yes, that's right. Who else? We don't have Rav Yosef Yisrael. We have Rav Yosef, who is the Tana who's being quoted. He's not an Amora. Who else do we have? We have Rav Huna, Rav Papa, Rav Zutra, Rav Yemar. That's right. Who else? Anyone else? Keep looking. There's more. Yes, we have Marimar. And, yes, Rav Pinchas. Now, the first thing we have to do, Rav Ame, that's right. The only way, now the first way we learn when we look at a sugya is we scan it and we see who all the Amorayim are. And then we identify them and map them according to their generations. Why do we want to do this? Because we want to determine what is the order in which the material was written. So we can learn it in historical sequence. In addition, we want to check and see what kind of sugya this is. Where can you find a list of generations, asks Israel. Well, if you want, you can send me an email outside of this course, and you can. We have a very good list of all of the Tanaim and Amoraim called Otsar HaDmuyot, which you can purchase if you want. It's very inexpensive, and we'll send it to you by mail. You can also check on the internet for other more perfunctory listings that might be available. In any event, what do we find when we scan the Amoraim and identify them and map them? We discover that there are two kinds of sugyot in the Bavli. There's the Amoraic sugyot, and there are what we call Stama sugyot. Amoraic sugyot are sugyot that developed during the Amoraic period, and in them, the Amoraim are always listed according to chronological sequence. And then the Shakta Vatarya was added on top of them as commentary. There are also Stama sugyas, which begin during the post-Amoraic period, and they are where the Stama, the sugya, is the main frame of the sugya, and the Amoraim that appear are not in chronological sequence, they're simply quoted quotations from the Amoraim to serve the needs of the Stama. Out of the 10,000 sugyot approximately in the Bavli, there are about 6,000 Amoraic sugyot and about 4,000 Stama sugyot. What kind of sugya is this? Let's identify and map our sugya and see how we should be learning it. Rav Huna. Who is Rav Huna? He is a second-generation Babylonian Amora, the Rosh Yeshiva in Sura, the Talmud of Rav. Who is Rav Papa? Rav Papa is a fifth-generation Babylonian Amora, a Talmud of Rava, whose main location was a place called Narash. Rav Merimar and Rav Yemar and Marzutra are all fifth and sixth generation Amoraim from various locations who all knew Rav Papa. At this point, what do we notice? What do we notice about the order of the presentation of the Amoraim? They're in chronological order, says Jeff, and Betsy says the same. That's correct. They're in chronological sequence. And that tells us that we have in front of us an Amore Sugya. Not only are they in chronological sequence, they're all Babylonians, right? So we have a Babylonian Amore Sugya. That tells us that we need to learn the Amoraim first and then learn the Stama on top of them, because the Amoraim were here first. But if you go further in the Sugya, you'll note that the other Amoraim who are presented there are Eretz Yisraelic Amoraim. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Abau, etc. Because what happened here is that the Eretz Yisrael Tzedikah Sugya was brought parallel to the Babylonian Sugya. Those who edited the Bavli, they do this quite often. They bring the full Babylonian Sugya, and then they bring the Sugya that is imported from Eretz Yisrael. Now this imported Sugya from Eretz Yisrael could begin also in the first or second generation and continue for two or three generations after that, so that really it's parallel to the Babylonian Sugya. And therefore we can learn it in one of two ways. We can either cut it horizontally or vertically. We can either say, let's learn all of the first and second generation material in Bavelo and Eretz Yisrael, and then move on according to the generations, one on top of the other. Or we could learn all of Bavel and then learn all of Eretz Yisrael. Now Betsy is asking, so this begins as an Amoreh Sugya, but then changes, and it's all on one dot. Well, it doesn't really change, Betsy. What's happening is that you have a skeletal structure of Amoraim who are there. When you get to the year 500, the Amoraim are all there, there. It's accumulated one on top of the other over the generations. And then the students of the Amoraim, the Savoraim, come to interpret it in a live shiur. And therefore, they're winding their words around all of the statements of the Amoraim the way you do when you're giving a lecture and quoting earlier sources. Somebody writes down the lecture, and therefore it looks to us as if it's all intertwined, but it's not really intertwined. It only sounded that way when it was given live and written down. But everyone who was there doing the live shiur knew the Amoraim before the Sakta Vatarya begins. So this is the problem we have today in schools that are slavishly dependent on the text, on the printed text, is that they're often learning in the Sugya late material before early material, and the whole thing becomes a mishmash. Rather than telling students that first they need to scan, identify, map, strategize, and then learn according to the right way. And that's how, in the Masorah, that's what all the Rishonim learned, the way I'm explaining to you now. How do I know that? Because we've scanned Rishonic literature, and our company is presently writing a book which will be published in the next year for adults, which will explain the entire Shita, and we're already up to over 500 sources from Rishonim that back up what we're saying. And there's many, many more. We uncover new sources all the time. The literature of the Rishonim is filled with references to proper method, just by the way. And it's only the last two generations, really, that in the popularized education movements of day schools in Israel and North America, that teachers who haven't had the necessary training present the texts as if they're just two-dimensionally rather than seeing them four-dimensionally. Betsy asks, the Savoraim interpreted on the daf, and they bring quotes from elsewhere, right? Well, they're not on the daf. It's a live shiur. The daf is simply a stenography. Someone wrote the shiur down as it was being said, that's all. And they bring quotes from elsewhere. Yes, they can. In addition to the Amoraim that are already there, that they're commenting on, they can bring quotations from elsewhere as well to amplify their discussion. And Eitan is saying, are you saying that it's the Stama that brings in the extra Israeli Sukkotia? No, I didn't say that. I said that those who edited the Bavli, that have edited the Torah HaAmoraim in the Bavli, brought the Babylonian Amoraim Sukkotia, the Israeli Amoraim Sukkotia, and then the Stama de Gemara comes and comments on the whole package that lies before it. It's in the same way that today, when you have a Rosh Hashiva today, the Rosh Hashiva stands up and he assumes that those sitting in front of him have learned the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, and he's coming to give value added, a Kakira, either in the Rishonim or Achronim or whatever it is. So that's the same. Nothing ever changes. That's exactly the way it's always been. That in the yeshivas of old, they did the same thing. They assumed you knew the Amoraim, Eretz Yisrael, and Bavel, and the Bali Astama were coming to give you value added. So Gil asks now, these books you mentioned, would they be published in English or in Hebrew, in both. Everything we do, we publish in two languages. Okay, let's move on. Now, we have Rav Huna in the second generation, and then we have Rav Papa in the fifth, followed by other Babylonian Amoraim in the sixth. And then we have an Israeli sugya that begins with the second generation, quoted by the third and even fourth generation. Let's take a look at Rav Huna. What is Rav Huna saying? Let us take a look carefully at his words and determine what exactly his Nemra was. Now, on the sheets that I've given you, I've already done the work for you because the Amoraim are in red and the Shaktavacharya is in black. So Rav Huna is saying, L'Rebbe Yossi. Amar Rav Huna, L'Rebbe Yossi. What is Rav Huna saying? What is the force of that remark? What is the context? Come. What is he relating to, Rav Huna? Who does Rav Huna usually relate to? He's the Talmid of Rav, who was the Talmid of Rebbe. So what can we assume Rav Huna is relating to? Yes, Yisrael is correct. Relating to the Mishnah. Gil, when you say that your sheets are in black, that's because you downloaded them and printing them. But if you look at them on the screen where you downloaded them from, you'll see they're in color. All right, but Yisrael, you're correct. He's relating to whether you have to stop or can keep eating in the Mishnah. He's relating to the Mishnah. He's saying that what the Mishnah is saying, that on Erev Pesach, Samuch L'Mincha, you can't eat until it gets dark, that this is according to the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. He's saying that this Baraita, which brings us the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yose, within the Machloket of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yose, our Mishnah is Rabbi Yose. Quoting from Rabbi Yose, that Rabbi Yose says, on Arve Shabbatot and Arve Chagim, you have to stop eating Samuch L'Mincha, or Mincha, from Min HaMincha L'Mala. But on you don't have to stop eating. But on Erev Pesach, you must stop eating from Mincha L'Mala, or Samuch L'Mincha L'Mala, because of the special dinim relating to Pesach. And therefore, what we have here, according to Rav Huna, is Rav Huna is attempting to identify the Tana of our Mishnah in light of the other Tanaitic material. He knows the Braita. The Braita that we have in front of us was said in the Yeshiva of Surah, and in the second generation, and Rav Huna is saying, yes, and in light of this Braita, we can see that our Mishnah, the Tana of our Mishnah, is Rav Yose. Rav Yehuda Nasi brought it as Sam Mishnah, but it goes according to Rabbi Yose, who holds that this is a special Isra by Erev Pesach, by other Shabbatot and other Chagim, you can eat Min HaMincha L'Mala. There's no prohibition to eat Min HaMincha L'Mala. This is the force of Rav Huna's statement. Now, let's take a look then at Rav Papa. What does Rav Papa say? Rav Papa says, the Erev Pesach, afilu samuch l'mincha asur. And in order for us to understand what Rav Papa is saying, the Balei Hasama de Sugya have mediated for us and have added the words afilu tema l'Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, that Rav Papa is suggesting that you can understand our Mishnah also according to Rabbi Yehuda. It doesn't necessarily have to be that it's according to Rabbi Yosef, distinguishing between Pesach on the one hand and Arvei Shabbatot and Chagim on the other. But it could be according to Rav Yehuda, where the distinguishing mark of the Mishnah is it says Samuch L'Mincha, as opposed to the Braita, which says Min HaMincha U'Lamala. Now, here we have Rav Huna and Rav Papa, who are separated by about 100 years. Rav Huna lived between the years approximately 240 to 280, and Rav Papa approximately 370. And therefore, we're talking about two different approaches to our Mishnah, separated by over 100 years, one from the other. And the question just jumps right off the page. Why in the world would Rav Papa all of a sudden wake up 100 years after Rav Huna and take a different tack in interpreting the Mishnah? What happened? The third generation and the fourth generation were more than happy with what Avuna had to say. No one said a word. All of a sudden in generation five, Rav Papa picks up his head and says, hey, wait a minute. This Mishnah can also be understood according to Rav Yehuda, not only according to Rav Huna, not according to Rav Yosef, the way Rav Huna said. And let's see how the other Amoraim related to him. After Rav Papa says what he says, we have another quotation of another Braita, which says, Mitesha Sha'ot Ulamala, as opposed to Minamincha Ulamala, referring to Erev Shabbat and Erev Chag. Now, according to Rav Papa, who holds that the differentiation between the Mishnah and the Braita is that both are quoted going to Rav Yehuda, but on Erev Pesach, the din is from Samuch Lamin, but from but on Shabbat and Chag, it's Samuch Lamincha is permitted, but Minamincha Lamala is what is asur. That is, that Rav Yud is adding an additional half hour, temporal hour of Isur to the Isur of eating. Then this second Braita is shocking because it says that even on Erev Shabbat and Chag, Rav Yud holds Minteisha Shoth, which is Samuch Lamincha. And that would mean that Rav Yehuda does not distinguish between Pesach and the other Shabbatot and Yamin Tovim. And Rav Papa's suggestion becomes troubled. So Rav Marzudra comes and says, Man leim alam de mitarefihi, dilma mishabeshtihi. Well, who knows? Maybe the second Braita is simply foul. Maybe the second Braita is corrupt. And if it's corrupt, then it doesn't really mean Teisha Sha'ot Ulamala, it means Minamincha Ulamala. And therefore, the force of Rav Marzutra's statement is to try and uphold Rav Papa's pshat against this second Braita, which challenges the possibility of Rav Papa in the first place. So, when Marzutra says this to uphold Rav Papa, comes Marimar. And some people say it was Rav Yemar. Marimar and Yemar are often confused with each other because their names are similar and from there the same generation. And whoever it is comes and says, what do you mean, Marzutra? Ana, iklai lepirkei de Rav Pinchas b'rei de Rav Ami. I happened to go to the lesson of Rav Pinchas b'rei de Rav Ami, who was in the previous generation to us. V'kam tana v'tanekame v'kiblamine. And a tana, that is a human tape recorder who was a specialist in tzaddik material, got up and taught this second Braita, which says, Mitesha Sha'ot Ulamala, and Rav Pinchas b'rei de Rav Ami accepted it from him. And if he accepted it from him, it means that it's okay. So you can't say it's Mishabeshta. So if the Braita, the second Braita is Mitzaretta, the second Braita is okay, that would mean that Rav Papa's pshat is wrong. So what are we supposed to do with that? What are we supposed to do with that? That eliminates Rav Papa's pshat. So, at this point, the Gemara finds itself in a position that that we are left only with Rav Huna's pshat. Rav Papa's pshat has been destroyed by a second Braita, which, although initially challenged by the Amoraim, was found to be reliable, and therefore we have no distinction between the Mishnah and other, between Pesach and Erev Shabbat and Chag, whether it's Minamincha or Samuch Lamincha. But apparently, Rav Yehuda holds on all these occasions, the prohibition to eat is Samuch Lamincha, Mitesha Sha'ot Ulamala, and we see that the Gemara is equating, the Amoraim are equating Tesha Sha'ot to Samuch Lamincha, so that already tells us that the Amoraim has solved the problem that we had in the Torah HaTanaim, which is how to understand these different terms. The Amoraim are saying that they're equivalent. Samuch Lamincha and Tesha Sha'ot are the same thing. And therefore, the second Braita and the Mishnah are identical. And therefore, all we're left with is the pshat of Rav Huna, which is that the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yosef, which is that on Erev Pesach, you have the Kiddush of the Nitzarach Ilah, but on Shabbat and Yom Tov, you don't have such a Mishnah. Now, this is the end of the Babylonian circuit. Babylonian Amoraic circuit. The sum is not finished, but the Amoraic circuit from Babylon is done. Now, when you look further, into the Israeli sugya, look what you discover. Wait, first of all, Eitan is saying, why do we assume no one learned this or had no ideas between the two rabbis? Maybe the other teachings were simply lost. Well, Eitan, you're right that we can always say that, but we don't say that, because our Masorah is pretty exact. Who were the teachers before Rav Papa? Rava, Abaye, Rav Yosef, Rava, the Gidolei Amoraim. If they would have said something on this, it would have been preserved. It would have been preserved. There's no way that the Amoraim would have preserved Rav Huna from Surah and Rav Papa from Narash and would have completely ignored statements from Pumbedita and Makosa. It doesn't make sense. So I don't take that approach. Now, David from Beit Shemesh asked, according to Rav Papa, are we talking about Mincha Gdula or Mincha Ktana? We're talking about Mincha Ktana. All the Amoraim assume we're talking about Mincha Ktana. Tesha Sha'ot is 9 temporal hours, which is Samuch L'Mincha Ktana, which is 9.5. And David is asking again, the 9th hour and Samuch L'Mincha are the same only for speaking about Mincha Ktana. That's right, that's what you just explained. That is correct. Now, let's take a look at the Israeli Sukkah. The Israeli sugya we have as follows. Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and some people say it was Rabbi Abau, who said in the name Rabbi Yose, Baridi Chanina, Halacha to Rabbi Yuda be'erev Pesach, Halacha to Rabbi Yose be'erev Shabbat. Now that's a very interesting remark. In Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan, by the way, who's been quoted, is second generation Israeli Amora. Rabbi Yose Bar Chanina is also. Rabbi Abau and Rabbi Yirmiya are respectively third and fourth generation Israeli Amoraim. And they're quoting the earlier post that they're saying that in the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yose, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda on Erev Pesach, that one must stop, but the halacha is like Rabbi Yose on Erev Shabbat and Chag. Now, my friends, I ask you, when an Amora says a pesach like this, halacha is like one side on Pesach, and like on the other side on Shabbat and Chag, then what does that tell us? That tells us that the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yose was both on Erev Pesach and on Shabbat and Erev Chag. If the machloket was in all cases, then Rav Huna's pshat is also in trouble. Because Rav Huna says that Rabbi Yose makes a distinction between Erev Pesach and the other holy days. But according to Pesach from Eretz Yisrael, that's not true. Rabbi Yose argues on Erev Pesach as well. And the Posek is saying halakha is like Rabbi Yehuda on Erev Pesach and like Rabbi Yose on the other days. So now we have a situation where, according to the second bright in the Sukkah, Rav Papa's pshat doesn't work. And according to the Pesach from Eretz Yisrael, Rav Huna's pshat doesn't work. So what do we do now? Betsy is asking, are we going to turn this around next and prove Huna wrong? Because today we understand that we don't have appetizers before Kiddush on Erev Shabbat. Well, we don't start with a presupposition that we want to destroy Rav Huna. I mean, we want to learn it according to what the sources said. And what the halakha is today, or what the halakha has been for about 500 years or 1,000 years, is certainly not relevant at this stage. Because we're only interested in what the halakha was during the time of the Gemara. And now, as you can all see on the screen, I've been asked to wrap things up because the Gemara is supposed to begin in 2 minutes. And so I'll just summarize and say that so far what we've done is we've learned the Mishnah, the Torah Tanaim, and we've taken an initial look at the Amoreh Sugya. In our next session, we're going to look at the Summit of Gemara, of this sugya and try and wrap this sugya up and get a picture of how the different levels of the material relate to each other and how Talmudic sugyas are born. Yes, I understand that the source sheets are in reverse order. I see that. I don't know exactly why that is, but that's how it's printed in PDF. You shall excuse me. Maybe after you print it out, rearrange the sheets according to what is convenient for you. And I look forward to seeing you all next Sunday morning at the same time on the Torah in Motion Broadcasting Network. And I wish you all a Shavuot Tov and my best to Zvi. How are you, Zvi? Nice to see you. Good luck and have a good year. Take care. Bye-bye, everyone.